Did Larry get sworn in?
Just don't do that. This one's back here.
Recorder's on.
Okay, Mr. Schoner, you want to call a meeting to order?
No.
Okay.
Just help me along a little bit here and
sure.
I'll get it away.
Okay.
I'll bring the meeting to order.
Okay.
What time is it?
What's
10:40? All right.
Take any.
First thing you do, second thing you do, and have
the pledge
of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now you read your public announcement.
Okay. As per requirement of the public law 1975, chapter 231, notice is hereby given that this is a regular meeting of the Borough of Highland Planning Board and all requirements have been met. Notice has been transmitted to the Asbury Park Press, Two River Times, and notice has been posted on the public bulletin board.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mullen?
Here.
Mr. Schoner?
Here.
Ms. Ruby? Absent. Mr. Roberts? Absent. Ms. Peterson?
Here.
Mayor Nolan?
Here.
Mr. Redman? Mr. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Stockton? Absent. Mr. Gallagher?
Here.
Mr. Colby?
Here.
Okay, we're going to have number seven, approval of...
Right, well, no, five, is, there's no motions. There's a new business. Actually, under new business, why don't we have Mr. Gallagher read that, sign it. Ms. Ruby isn't here, so we can't have her sign it. As to number seven, Mr. Chairman, resolution's not ready. There's one issue that has to be resolved between the two engineers. Mr. Keating's away this week. Mr. McGann is in no rush to get his resolution, so he said, let's just carry it, and I agreed, so we'll deal with it in May.
Okay.
Yeah,
so number seven, we're carrying the May, sir?
Yes. That will just be the resolution on that.
Right.
You need a resolution to carry that?
Voice vote. Moved second.
Okay. We need a vote on this.
Okay.
A motion.
I'll offer it.
Second.
And the second by?
Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Gallagher. Mr. Mullen?
Yes.
Mr. Schoner?
Yes.
Ms. Peterson?
Yes.
Mayor Nolan?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gallagher?
Yes.
Motion carries. Here is Mr. Gallagher's oath of office for the record.
Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Colby. Oh, you're not sworn in yet? I'm sorry. I apologize for the absence.
Did you sign a oath? Okay, so
he is good.
Yeah, he's good.
Sure. That's all he's good. I'm not trying to take.
Yeah, he's been appointed. We have the resolution or the notice from the mayor. And according to my voicemail from Carolyn, you signed off on the oath, so you're good to go.
So he can vote?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Colby?
Yes.
Okay. Unfinished business of our hearing of adjournment? No?
None.
Hearing of new business?
None.
None. Okay, action on the other business. Reviewing the ordinance is 012-9. Second revision and review of the zoning ordinance amendment 01210 revised.
Okay.
Adoption of the resolution with recommendations of 0129 and 01210.
With that, I think we should bring Mr. Truscott in. I'm sworn. Sir, please raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony about to give this matter the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Please state your name for the record. Spell it and set forth your affiliation with the board, please.
Okay. Martin Truscott. T-R-U-S-C-O-T-T with the firm of T&M Associates, planner to the Borough of Highlands. Do we just start or just?
Yes, just start.
Okay,
please.
That Borough Council had introduced for first reading two ordinances of 12-9, 12-10, And I was requested at the council meeting to attend this meeting with the planning board just to go over the changes that were made to the ordinances. I know you talked about it at the last meeting at length, and then based on those comments, changes were made to the ordinances. And so I'll just go over those quickly, and then we can have questions or discussion. Let me start with 12.9. That has to do with the mobile home residence zone district. Let me see, starting on page 1, originally the ordinance just allowed for, in addition to mobile homes, a mid-rise multifamily dwellings, but townhouses and single-family detached dwellings have been added as additional uses that are permitted, and that's both those, the townhomes and single-family are consistent with what the master plan had recommended there. On page 2, under the mid-rise multifamily development, the density had originally was at 20 units per acre, and that's now been changed to 14 dwelling units per acre. And it also allows that bonus, the density bonus that the board had talked about at one time, is to allow additional 2 units per acre if a public scenic overlook area is included within the development in that location.
Marty, it was unclear to me whether that bonus was available for townhouse development, multifamily development, and the mid-rise, or is it just mid-rise?
Just mid-rise, and that's why it's located just under that section 5 there, under A, density, so it's just under there. So, to me, that's clear. Otherwise, it would it should say that it was available to everything, but it's just under that section.
And why? Well, one area,
okay. I'm sorry. I understand your question now. That it would be allowed in other developments. I guess it could be something that for townhouses. I guess it could be something that could be provided. I just didn't see it being something that would be possible with a single family development because you would have.
No, I meant just townhome development.
Just townhomes.
I presume that the notion of providing an overlook is an amenity that you're trying to achieve in this
right.
development. And I would wonder if you wouldn't want to offer that same thing for other developments.
Possibly for townhomes.
For anything.
Yeah, that's
Marty.
That might.
Well, maybe not the single family.
Yeah, not the single family.
Basically, doing right. a subdivision.
Right, right. And then you're going to have streets, and it would be
right.
hard to have access to.
If you're going to keep the same. Uniform lot, then I think that maybe access would be appropriate.
Yeah, that would make sense, I think.
I think the intent was to do it for anything except, obviously, single family.
So we could make the townhomes, say, up to 6, because right now it's 4 units per structure?
No,
it's different. Density. You're talking about connecting. You're talking about when they're connected, Arthur? In other words, we didn't want to see a row of 20 townhouses connected together. The subcommittee broke it up by
got it. Okay.
You know, for density, visual aesthetics.
The density was changed from 14 to 16, so I would think that a similar density upgrade would be available
for townhomes as well as multifamily high rise.
I think pretty much for anything except single family was the intent of the subcommittee, if I remember. I mean, it's been a year. I think that was the intent of the subcommittee.
Probably.
It's been a year.
Would number 6 cover that?
Sorry,
for both?
We limited it to what was it, 6 stories, Marty? About 3?
Six. We'll just see what.
So it's one of the 6 story townhouse, I guess. It was 6 story, yeah. It was the height limit.
No, I don't think
yeah.
can.
No, I'm joking.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, actually, Jack pointed out, I'm sorry. Just going back to density bonus. Yeah, let me just retract what I said. The density bonus under number 6 on the next page, on page 3, the density bonus for public access area says multifamily. So it's a wider.
It's anything but single family. Basically.
Yeah. So it would it would include townhomes. Then it wouldn't need to make the change. So it would include townhomes and mid rise. So that would be addressed already.
Okay.
Thank you, Jack.
But so that the article that you first said 5 made it exclusive to that.
No,
Well, that's because it addresses mid-rise.
Mid-rise specifically.
And multifamily.
Right, I know that, but then that doesn't that, Marty's first take was that therefore it was only available there. Doesn't that still stand? His interpretation was
well,
at that moment that that's...
He hadn't read six.
He wrote it.
No, but he didn't get to it. I mean, he just had to refresh his recollection by going to six. He forgot that
It wasn't clear to me when I read it whether it was available to all multifamily or just from the mid-rise.
It's been a while since I wrote that. So, but it's... And I wrote it specifically, say, multifamily, as opposed to mid-rise multifamily, specific for that reason, so it would be more open. But, yeah, single family would be excluded from that.
Okay. So. And another question I have about these overlooks is that there's really no goals set for what this overlook has to achieve and where it might be located, how big it has to be, that sort of thing, because it could be a token overlook.
I know. I don't know that you can do too much in the ordinance to define it.
Do we actually need an overlook there where these people are going to be living? If we get everybody
No. This would be a specific public
overlook,
not for the units. But
that's exactly
to,
it's public just public. A method of getting a bonus, really.
But if you but to address your point, Peter, is I specifically said if this gives the board a little bit of discretion. If you read the planning board at its sole discretion, so that means you don't have to give it. If the overlook is, in terms of the density bonus, if you get a token overlook and you say that's not what we're looking for, then you don't give the density bonus. So that's why at the sole discretion may allow an increase in the maximum density of up to two units per acre. So maybe it's a mediocre overlook. You say I'll give it one unit per acre. So there's a little bit of play in there, some flexibility. If an acceptable scenic look overlook is included in the development plan, so that gives, I think, I don't know that you can specifically say, oh, it has to be an acre an area or has to include parking for 25 cars or whatever. I don't know that you can really get into that kind of detail in the ordinance. That would be part of the site plan process. That's the way I see it. Do it and give the board some flexibility in terms of how they award it or not award it.
Yeah, you go on to end that the board can allow a lesser bonus if the overlook or access provisions offer only minimal public benefits. So
yeah.
Covered.
Yeah.
Pretty thoroughly.
Yeah. So that's why I Okay. Okay. Then I'll move on. And then let me see. So I had jumped to page three, number six, the density bonus, and then number seven, ridgeline protection. That section has been added to address, and again, it's really to give some principles in terms of ridgeline protection, as opposed to getting into specifics. And again, I see it as part of the site plan process, where it reads that residential development should exhibit a high level of sensitivity to the terrain in an effort to minimize the visual impact. And then blending in with the existing contour elevation. So it's more principles and guidelines as opposed to specific requirements. Peter, I know you're
right. I disagree completely. I think it doesn't make sense to me to have an idea of how to protect the ridge and make it so loose. It's too loose for an applicant to understand it's too interpretive. The applicant thinks is appropriate and varied and so forth, maybe completely
different. Check out the engineering. You talk about engineering again, right?
Well, you're also talking about aesthetics, too.
I
see ridgeline protection as basically not having, as it says in our master plan, not having a silhouette of a building against the sky on the ridge. And to me, the one simple way to affect that is to make a setback some relationship to the height of the building. So if it's a two-story building and it's set back 4 stories from the front, then it has a certain impact. If you put a 5 or a 6-story building 25 feet or 30 feet from that, it has a much different impact. So my feeling is setback is a very reasonable way to lessen the impact of high-rise structures on the hill, or as seen as a silhouette on the ridgeline. And I'm thinking of it from below. You know, I'm thinking of the way this thing
right.
is
from yeah.
Sandy Hook and from downtown. I don't right. really undergressing what it looks like from Highway 36.
Yeah, that's, you know, I look at it the same way. It's just in terms of, you know, where it'd be viewed from. But I'm not so sure without having a specific site and the contours in terms of setting up and being able to justify certain setbacks and certain specific setbacks.
Putting quantifying setbacks around the rest of the property. You have setbacks everywhere, you know, and distances between buildings, and they're fairly arbitrary, I think. And to me, this is just another arbitrary method of trying to protect the ridge. Also, I think I'm concerned about what would the worst scenario of development on this site be. Given that there aren't regulations for the number of units in a building and no minimum building size or maximum building size, could we be entertaining a development not unlike the one that's on 36, just on the other side of the CVS Mall, where it's a five-story building, and it just goes on forever? There's no break. There's no opening. It's just a big block of five-story apartments. Is that a structure that would be permitted under these ordinances?
I guess in a certain level of it. I mean, there is some language here. Roof lines and roof forms, roof lines should be disaggregated into a series of smaller components to try to get some different levels and different break it up so you won't have one roof line.
But where the structure meets the ground, it could very easily be a structure like that that's developed in Middletown on 36.
I think I know where the one you mean.
Which one are you talking about?
And I don't think that's an appropriate development for that myself. And I think that the ordinances that control the development should recognize the impact of that type of development. The footprint of the high rises was very, very small, very, very little impact on the thing. Something like this could be a huge impact.
That building, that's only five stories, that kind of?
Yes.
We're allowing six. Kind of sinks down.
Okay, should we keep going? Any more discussion on
that? Are we going to make any changes to that?
Well, these are the changes we asked for at the last meeting.
Yeah, it's, unless the board, it's my opinion that, and I know Peter disagrees, but in terms of setting without having having the specific site and trying to do a specific site plan, I don't know that I can come up with specific setbacks or and to be able to justify. I mean, once you put some numbers on paper, you really have to be able to justify and what the setbacks are. And I mean, it's going to have the zoning setbacks according to the ordinance, but. And they'll have setbacks, but something in terms of the visual impact, I think it has to be, it would have to be very specific and quantified. So I don't know, that's what I'm suggesting. I'll see if the board wants to do anything more with it.
All right, anybody else have any other questions on that?
Just continuing on page four, the relocation rights that was added back in, somehow that sort of dropped out. It was on the initial.
No, that's what we asked for in the beginning.
Because originally, because that whole ordinance
had it,
but that was thrown out. So
then we revised a couple of things, and I guess we lost that. But I know we wanted it back.
Why do you want it back?
That's what the will of the council is, unanimously.
I think it's a mistake.
Okay, it still didn't happen, but that's all due respect. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. I guess just to step back.
Could you explain that to me? As I understand it, I'm not sure I understand it right. That the when there's relocation rights for those property owners that are regulated by the state, I think this adds an additional layer of approval.
It reinforces it.
That they go through the whole state process and then. comes back to the Board of Original Jurisdiction, which would be this board, to give an additional approval.
You'll go to the council.
It goes to the council, not to the...
That's to my understanding.
I read it as being this board.
Okay, is it this board more, or is it the cover you actually coming out here?
I'll have to read it.
To the Board of Original Jurisdiction.
Without analyzing the whole clause, if you put it in the same way it was originally when the high-rise came through, it basically, the procedure would be to make it a condition of preliminary approval. They would have to go out and go through the relocation process, and then, as part of final approval, they'd have to prove to this board that they complied with it.
Okay.
That's the way it was set up originally.
So it becomes part of the site plan.
Yeah, it really, right. That's the only way to do it. It becomes more of a site plan issue. It's a condition of preliminary.
A final.
It's a condition of preliminary. You can't get final without complying
with that condition, right. Yeah.
But final.
It's the same thing. Just
worded differently. Yeah.
And it could be the zoning board, too, if the zoning board had the application.
Yeah, if it's a zoning board jurisdictional matter, then it would go back to that.
That's okay. So that's the ordinance.
Last sentence. An applicant must provide proof of compliance with this paragraph to the Board of Original Jurisdiction prior to obtaining final approval.
So to the zoning or plan.
The zoning or plan, yeah. Whichever board it winds up before. But it does go back to that board before as part and parcel of the process between preliminary to final.
Okay. And how's proof of compliance defined?
That's the tough one. That was always a difficult issue because we never had one. Something new. The applicants, because under the statute, they have to prove compliance with the statute. Say, this is what the statute requires, this is what we did, and here you go. And if we have to hire somebody that's an expert in housing relocation to tell us yay or nay, then the board would do that.
Well, that's great. Well, if the statute changes, you still have to follow the statute.
Right.
It just seems to me that I vaguely remember when this was first put in, what, 5 or 6 years ago, this is saying the final approval on any plans for development,
if this is triggered as part of the process,
right?
A condition, let's say you have X, Y, and Z requirements for site plan approval.
Right.
This is an additional requirement. Okay. We can give preliminary without this being complied with, but we won't give them final until they prove compliance with all the conditions of preliminary, which this would be one.
So theoretically, if somebody presents a site plan, before their plan is approved, everybody would have to be relocated?
Before their plan is given final approval, they would have to comply with whatever the requirements of that statute are.
So, for example, if Scuduto Trust had a mobile home on their part,
right.
would they have had to relocate everybody on that property prior to us voting on a resolution for their plan of doing that?
They would have to do exactly what it said. They would have to provide proof to the satisfaction of the board original jurisdiction that adequate private residential facilities and circumstances exist for the relocation of those mobile park residents consistent with whatever the requirements are.
So everybody would have to. So I
don't know that says that it's their responsibility. The statute 46:8C-21 through 8C, it's 21. I don't know that says they have to actually move them there, or they have to show those folks that they have to prove to us that there's adequate residential facilities within a reasonable geographic area, whatever the statutory requirement is.
It's just
a vague
state law, basically.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't say, they already have to obey the state law. This says, the way I understand this, it says that they have to have fulfilled the requirements of the state law before we'll approve their plan.
Before we give them final.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the state
law? That could be...
Whatever the state law, whatever this statute says, I'm sure before you put it in, borough attorney looked at it.
Borough attorney was Dominic, what's his name at the time?
Yeah, it was 6 years ago.
Yeah, the I think this is potentially a huge can of worms.
We'll have a discussion with the public later on.
I think I can clarify something though.
It's up to the attorney.
It's up to you.
Gentlemen, what do you think? Sure. All right, go ahead.
Can I be sworn in?
Lori Dimple.
Please raise your right hand.
32 Paradise Park.
Soundless swear the testimony about the police report. If you're true, tell the truth, but nothing. That will be finished. Nothing but the truth.
Okay.
And
so this was.
Time out. I'm going to let you talk, but you got to let me do my thing.
Okay.
So that the record is clear. I need you to state your name for the record and spell it and give us your address again, please, because I don't know that it's picked up from back there.
Lori Dibble. D-I-B-B-L-E.
Okay, and your address again, please.
32 Paradise Park.
Thank you.
So this was written by Greg Vella, who was hired by the borough to come up with some sort of protection to mitigate a loophole in the state statute. In the Mobile Home Protection Act, basically the same wording that is in that act is there. If someone goes before a zoning board for approval to change the use, they have to submit there has to be an approved relocation plan.
Right.
But because that law didn't anticipate that there would be a whole zoning change, it doesn't provide the residents with protection if there's a zoning change. Only if there's a zoning approval, like a board of a zoning adjustment approval.
Well,
you made the statement.
So instead of applying for a change of zoning to change the use of the community, prior to a change of use. Here, what they've done is changed the zoning, the overall zoning. So they have to bring a site plan before the planning board, going for a zoning change.
And I guess it was Mr. Vella's interpretation or the council's interpretation at the time that was a loophole rather than the intent of the legislature when the law was passed.
No. Strangely enough, I just left the closing in Philadelphia, and the seller's attorney was Greg Vella. And while we were waiting for bank counsel to finish doing whatever they were doing for the last 4 or 5 hours, we got into discussions about zoning and planning, and we were talking, I told him I'd come in tonight, about the ordinance. And he recalled specifically when he drafted the ordinance this way, And he went specifically through it. He said, because I wasn't sure if he was talking about the ordinance that was struck down by the courts. And he said, no, this was a prior ordinance. He was talking about this specific phraseology, which was put in, and then the council voted four in favor because you had to have a supermajority because of the situation. And he said that the way it was structured and the clear intent was that you don't have to actually relocate these individuals that are being taken out of their units. What you actually have to do is show to the jurisdictional board, whether it's the council or at this level it would be us, that there is adequate housing available. And it doesn't necessarily have to be within Highlands. It can be within a reasonable distance. Out in Montana, it's not going to work, but certainly 10-15 minutes from here would work. But you don't, according to him, he said the way he described it to me, without having read the statute that's in there, it wasn't a matter of where you actually had to go through the relocation itself.
Right.
You just had to show that there was adequate facilities locally, however that might be defined.
Which part do you think would be better to enforce this, the council or the planning board, in your opinion?
And this is where the Shadow 1 ordinance, right?
I don't really have an opinion. I mean, if it's really the prerogative, well, it's the prerogative of the governing body. Do they want to retain jurisdiction to do it themselves, or do you want the planning board? And if the governing body has the right to delegate powers to the planning board, that are not expressly prohibited under the law. And they feel that, I guess they felt that it would be the planning board that would be the better place as part of the approval process. You may very well have to do the same thing on both levels. Since this is new stuff, you know, let's say one comes in next week. I don't think anybody here, I've never had to deal with this.
Okay. What the final approval is given is out of the sports campaign,
right? Well, it's still got to
be. Well, has anybody ever done? I don't think anybody's ever done it.
But there's got to be somebody somewhere that's had experience.
I think Mr. Gulley invented this for this purpose.
No, it's a statute.
The statute, but the not making it. We've added another layer over and above the statute.
But I think it's a fairly simple process. All they have to do is prove that they've complied with the statute, and your job is done.
Unless somebody disagrees and objects.
It's not necessarily it's compliance with the statute. I mean, you just have to find out if they did or they didn't, but have the testimony come in. And if people believe that they didn't do that and they count. Counterpoint, whether it's done at the council level or it's done here, it's going to have to be, you're still going to have to face the issue. And it's the council's prerogative as to where it should go. I don't have an opinion on that.
Seems logical to me. If this is
part of the site.
Jurisdiction is looking at the site plan. And
I agree. Anybody else have any questions?
I'd like to have a better understanding of what proof of compliance means.
Well, I mean, we just heard that pretty much the council has unanimous support for this. I don't know really how much we can leave now.
I understand that, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up that, you know, we don't know what proof of compliance means. I think we've got a problem. Or potential problem in the future.
Mr. Sarpico, do we?
Well, it's like anything else.
You know what the proof of compliance is with our first deep slope ordinance in terms of having a review? Could you give me that? It's something you have to get somebody in here to know about.
You're going to have to face it when it comes. That's the type of situation. We can't say here now exactly what compliance is and what. I mean, look at the statute, and you follow the criteria in the statute. You make sure your job is to analyze whether or not the applicant followed the criteria. And they show you proofs. If you don't think that, even if there's no objectives, if somebody just says here's the plan and you look at it and you say after having the planner look at it, and say look, we don't think you did an adequate job, even though there's no objectives. Go back to the drawing board, do a better job.
Could be the exact opposite of 100 objectives, and we think you did.
Right. Or the other one. It's like any other regulation that you'll face it and take the criteria that you have, which in this case is this statute. Like Peter said, if it was a steep slope ordinance, you take the steep slope ordinance and you apply it to the facts of the case that are before you. And then you make a decision whether or not you think it's been complied with or not.
And if people weigh in on it,
yeah.
More than likely on both sides.
Yeah, and that's.
And that's a tough road.
That's what we're here for, to make the decisions. And whether we do it or whether the council does it is not, I have no opinion on it. That's just, I don't think
it seems to be reasonable to have it at this table.
That's up to you, folks. Okay. I don't get into the subjective thing. You should be walking in.
And Mr. Sufi,
yes.
You have your recollection from earlier today with Mr. conversation with Mr. Right. Bella, but you haven't reviewed NJSA 48:8C21 or 2A:18:61.7A, right?
Not in a long time. Not since the very beginning of the application for the highways. I did look at it then, because I knew we were going to have to deal with it, but that was now 2 years ago or so. Yeah, or maybe more than that. So
four or five.
I can't tell you that. I don't have any recollection as to what the actual process is.
Tony, What does the board think of this? What can we do? Look into it further?
Send it back to the council.
Send it back to the council?
I'll look for that.
Keep in mind that we're doing consistency review.
Yeah.
If you have some comments or some advice to the council, I think you can add that on to either. Your task, as we've done before, is to determine whether it's consistent or not consistent with the master plan. Right. But you're free, of course, to add other comments and advice.
But I mean, it just seems to me that we really don't have this tied down to where we're going to, it's good or bad for us. And I think we should review it, all these statues, and go over it again.
Well, this is what we did the last couple of years.
Mr. Chairman, this was in the last ordinance, and we went through the planning board then.
No, he's saying that it's got to add back in.
No, but it was part of an ordinance that was adopted by the planning board.
It's the same language as same for the other one, yeah.
By this planning
board. Oh, yeah, actually, we're stuck with it, right?
Yeah. I think you have some confidence in the borough attorney and the circuit governor.
All right.
It's
and send it back to the council as it is.
Okay. Well, that's what we'll do.
How long for it? Are you finished with your analysis?
That's the first ordinance.
Yeah. So, okay, then it's time for discussion and a resolution. By the way, I have a question. Now, as it's now written, I have, as you can see in the generic resolution, in the now therefore be resolved clause, I put a space in for whether it's consistent or inconsistent with the land use elements or other elements, and does it or does it not advance the purposes and planning objectives of the master plan? So we have to address those issues. I mean, if in your review of the master plan and this ordinance,
from my perspective, I'm not sure that you could keep it as, you may have to expand on that language.
Okay.
What I want to try to say is that the mid-rise multifamily dwellings are the only thing that's inconsistent with what was recommended in the master plan. But this ordinance does include recommendations from the master plan, the townhome development, the single family development, the public overlook access, the ridgeline protection, at least some language addressing that. Those are, so it's not so cut and dry. That,
If I put it at the very end, at the asterisk, and it said that it is consistent with the land use and other elements of the borough, of the Highlands Borough Master Plan, and the ordinance does advance the purposes of planning, etc. Put an asterisk in and go down, with the exception of...
With the exception, yeah.
Would that suffice?
In my mind, that's... Yeah.
So that should read... with exception of... the provision...
To allow the mid-rise multifamily development. Because that was not specifically included in the master plan recommendation. But it does also advance a greater diversity of housing types to be allowed in that zone.
Okay. I think they're just the general. So they'll have to take that as they see it. It just says that with the exception of the provision allowing mid-rise multifamily development in the zone. Yes.
My feeling is that mid-rise development here is not only not consistent with the master plan, it's inappropriate, both as established now, allowing to build mega buildings that have undetermined footprints, heights that can be set very close to the hill, no mandatory setbacks. No, and CAFRA has mandatory setbacks on the water. If you build a small structure, you can't build it close to the water. I don't think it's inappropriate for us to think about protecting our ridge just the way CAFRA protects the shoreline. I think that there are three points. I'm concerned about the type of development that will happen as a result of the laxness of controls of the footprint of the building. It can just be a mega structure. I think it's much more appropriate to have sporadic, small development, limited development townhouses in clusters of four, which can be in some instances
perceived as single-family homes from a distance is much more consistent with the surrounding R203 district and very appropriate. I don't think these kind of structures are appropriate at all.
I only write down what the board decides as a whole. I mean, I don't just take each individual comment.
No, I understand.
You have to tell me.
Yeah. Anything else, Mr. Moses?
That's it.
Anybody else here?
I disagree with Peter on the mid-rise, but I think he may have a point on defining the setback from the bridge line. But if you refresh my memory, Morty, how you said that you thought that would be part of the site plan
and review.
And as we've got the ordinance written, it provides for that.
Well, it does provide specifics. It provides sort of a set of guidelines or principles for the board to use as tools and leverage over developer in terms of getting the kind of development it wants in terms of conforming the steep slopes and conforming to the contours.
So if theoretically if we got to present the plans for a 5-story building. 25 feet from the ridge to be built, 25 feet from the ridge line. What can we do to make them put it back?
Well, granted that these are principles, and it can always be seen as sort of just general. But you can use those principles to say this is what we want on this site, and this is what the ordinance says, and so for the developer to go back and redesign it.
Marty, this ordinance establishes the planning board's ability to make on a case-by-case basis the setback, correct?
Right, right. But I mean,
what the intent
is. There's always a point in counterpoint. The counterpoint to that is you always got to be careful that you don't want an ordinance to be too vague, because then it's right. Be declared void for vagueness. If you can go, it's one of those things, you got to have some principles or guidelines that an applicant can look at and say, if I can comply with these, they have to give me an approval. It isn't something where it's nebulous,
right?
And then they come in and say, "Wait a minute, then the standards can be applied one way to one person, one way to another." Okay, it's not mm-hmm. constitutional in its essence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, to get real specific for, let's say, a 3-story structure, and you only wanted X amount of feet from a ridge, ordinance might say that. If it's 5 stories, you want it at Y. If it's 6. Whatever it is, if you want to do some kind of set of calculations to have specific setbacks for specific types of buildings then and sizes, that's entirely up to the council.
Can you refresh my memory? What does the steep slope ordinance require in terms of?
25 feet from the top of the hill for any structures, and I think 15 feet for the disturbance of the land. So I think, to a degree, the soils analysis and geotechnical things will make you put taller buildings further back because of the instability of the hill.
Right.
But my feeling is we should look as a planning board in the town as trying to formulate an idea of ridge protection, which can be used anywhere in town, but specifically at this site. Now, because these people are coming before us, we're changing the ordinance here, so that if there is an intent to protect the ridge line, so we don't have buildings that are shooting up against the skyline against it, that we set some sort of setback from it. And that would be over and above whatever geotechnical, or it may not even come into play, because I think the high-rise buildings that were up there were well back of what I would think would be an appropriate distance for something from the ridge of a hill, and it was only going to be 5 or 6 stories. That was my feeling, it should be a 2-to-1 ratio, that it's like a 30-degree angle, so that you're leaving a lot of frontage in front of the thing, the ridge, so you're not say so much of the profile of the building. Also, with regard to the some other setbacks that are on the site, Marty has a distance between buildings, I believe, that is equal to the height of the structure. And I think that that's going to drive these people towards making mega structures because they have to have so much space between buildings in order to meet the setback requirements between buildings. Says, well, why don't we just make one building? Do you think that's a case, Marty?
It could. I think it's logical. That might happen. I mean, we were originally concerned, and this goes back to a year or two ago when we discussed it, that we're going to have multiple buildings and being too close, but
Well, I think they may have separated the buildings with the Gudim, but first comes to my mind as an architect is, well, what are they trying to do and how can I get around it?
Like anything, as you know, it's a balance. And
you're one of those architects.
You know, if you have a megastructure, then you might have problems in terms of, you know, meeting the contours.
I agree, Peter has a point there, because that definitely wasn't the intent going back, you know, to last year when this was being worked out. The intent was to break it up, separate them, air, light, access of emergency vehicles. Mm-hmm. We discussed all of those things. So it's a lot of unintended consequences as we get these huge barracks. That's not what anybody was thinking we wanted up there. So that would probably be worth making a recommendation at this point.
Well, I think you're right on that. I think there should be no big, massive buildings, all separated, everything else, so it looks decent and it's aesthetic to the area. So what do you think we should do with this, Mr. Serpico?
Well, if you want to get specific, specific types of structures, distances between structures and the like, I think you really, Marty, you're a planner. You got your. It's either one of these things where you go sort of the way it is now and you work with it, or if you're going to get very particular, then you need very particular guidelines.
Understand now, but get to the counterpoint that you brought up before. Is this, in your opinion, is the way it is too vague? Would this?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that. I mean, where that would the distances are not set forth in here. Okay, what. The distances are.
But we have a steep slope ordinance, so it's right. 25 feet.
Yeah, but as Peter said, that, you know, I can't.
You know, when that ordinance was established, the maximum height of the building in allowed in the borough was 35 feet high. Mm-hmm. So 25 feet was not all that out of place. But if you're building something that's six stories high, then I think that you have to change your.
But the geotechnical work. And the engineering was prohibited from being that close. At 25 feet, if you're looking at a 6-7 story building.
No, I believe it would.
Yeah, but if you want to get real specific, as Peter said, sometimes the geotechnical stuff will still put a massive structure very close to the original.
Could you ask for a view shift?
But if you're going to do all this.
Make a recommendation that the council consider having a view shift.
Yeah, but I think
we already did that with the.
I think it goes beyond that. If you're gonna get real specific about wanting to tie up things and making sure that you don't get something you don't want, I think you have to develop a set of regulations that are strong. That say if the structure is certain mass, certain height, it has to be X feet from the original. Okay, and if it's and there's mathematical calculations that you'd have to work out. That makes sense to me. This way you know what you're going to get and where. And this distance between buildings. Peterson, I don't know that your ordinance may encourage now to have just one massive structure so you don't have it. You're not going to get the smaller structures with distances because the developer sees that it's easier to put one structure. Right?
And maybe there's a limited amount of developable space up there because so much of it is steep slope. So whatever they do, they're going to aggregate into this one portion of the lot. If they have a lot of restrictions in terms of building separation distances, they're not going to build buildings, they're going to build building.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you want to get real tight control, then you've got to go all the way. You know, some things you can't go halfway, you got to go the whole way. So if you want to get real tight control, that's where you go. If you want to try and approach it on a less strict basis, then what you have is what you have. It's entirely up to you. Your recommendations can be whatever. Then it's up to the council, may or may not adopt that. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's not a matter of, you know, whether you strengthen it or whatever, whether you're against the ordinance or for the ordinance. It's whether you make a recommendation to either change it for the council to change it. You can say that. You want ridgeline protection, and that's good to have in the ordinance, but it needs to be X, Y, and Z if you want it. So it's not a for or against type of thing.
But where can we have a high rise in here? Peter, I don't get it. I don't see how you're saying
he's talking about the previous one.
That's the previous, yeah.
Yeah, but to go back to your concern, we've got the. I don't see a high rise in this ordinance. I see density, so not.
You misunderstood me. I never said that they were allowed to build high rises there. I said that the way this is set up with the separation distance between buildings, it's more than likely that they will build a single building in order to give up the 6-story space that they need to keep between adjacent buildings. Some developments. You have as little as 60 feet or something like that between buildings. Maybe that's the height of the building. I don't know.
Okay, so they still only have to have 14 units, right?
Right. Only. That's the highest we have in this town.
Yeah, but it's not the 14 units.
And they have a lot of acreage and not a lot of developable sites. So that actually the aggregation is going to be greater than that. So that's, I think, why people are thinking of multifamily structures, and I can understand that in terms of development. Right?
So maximum height of any structure in this zone is 6 stories?
Yeah.
I think that to give you an idea, right now the dwelling units per acre is 12, mobile home park. Allowing two more units, so it doesn't have to be. And that's pretty well distributed around up there.
Well, the max can be a six stories, as I was saying.
Yes, with the mid rise. Yeah.
Okay. And 14 units per acre, and the minimum lot size is 10 acres.
Yes.
That's a 14-acre lot, I think.
Around 12 or something like that.
Yeah. So your concern is that they're going to have one big building with 140 units?
Yeah. I think that's a potential for for development.
That's 6 stories high.
And again, it depends on what their market is. If they're not going to market as high-end people, if that's the type of development they do. I don't know where the market is and what happens to that sort of development.
Try to close the loop if I can. If the board feels like, you know, maybe the recommendation is that, you know, that maybe to add some, you know, to strengthen that particular section, you know, that would be the recommendation that they could add to the council at the time.
I think we should, in my opinion.
That would be 23 units per floor. How are they going to do that in 14 units per acre? I don't get it. I understand what you're saying. If we did,
how many units are on the tack on the floor?
I don't know.
How much square footage would the individual units be?
The tack is a 5-story, 6-story building, right?
But you can't have 25 units on 23 units on a floor and have it make and have it be 14 units per acre. The 14 units per acre protects us from that, is what I'm saying. I'm saying the 14 units per acre protects us from having the kind of structure, worst case of what you're bringing forward.
No, I think that you could get, you're saying you don't think you could get the whole population in one building? I think you could.
And not keeping 14 units per acre.
What do you mean? They had 20 units 14. An acre in the high-rise scheme, and they got it in two buildings.
Saying that because of the height, it would have to go out.
Right.
And if it goes out, it's going to cover more than an acre at 14 units per.
Yeah, if you're topping it off at 6 stories and 14 units per acre, The math is simply, you, so 140, you said one big building and 140 units, I asked you that. And you say yes. I said, well, that's 23 units per floor, six floors up.
Right.
I don't think you get that.
It's not that the building has to occupy the acre.
How many units do you think are before in that one road?
It's the gross acreage multiplied times the amount per acre.
Yeah, you don't have to distribute it.
What you are limited here is that Peter said was that the site, a lot of the site can't be developed. So your natural barriers on geography is the site itself, whatever the usable building envelope might be.
Okay, I see.
But it's not 14 units per acre. I get where you're coming from. Uh-huh. It's 14 units per gross acre. Not that where they came from. You know, those 637 is going to be 114 in one square acre.
Okay.
How the geography, the topographical conditions, how that limits them, I can't tell. I'm a lawyer, not a...
So you want to recommend not having one massive building and...
Yeah.
Multiple structures.
Recommend multiple structures.
Yeah, or require
take care of both.
Require it then, rather than encourage it.
Well,
it wouldn't be one big building. that's a concern.
Well, say more about that, huh?
Multiple structures with adequate view corridors.
Then it wouldn't determine what adequate is.
No. That's okay. The thing. You can't do it. See, that's the thing. You can't have an ordinance that's vague. Because you're gonna say that, well, we don't think there's adequate coverage. They're gonna say, well, we think it is. Well, where is it in your ordinance that tells us
one or two or three?
I'm saying, whatever's in your ordinance.
You can say multiple structures, though.
Yeah, you can say multiple structures.
Would be more than one, for sure.
But if you're going to say, we don't think you have adequate distance between
these structures. If you ask for multiple structures, then they have to go to that back. They have to go back to that space between that exists. Right?
Exactly.
Right. If there's
an ordinance that covers it, then there's a distance requirement.
Okay, so
yeah, it's something that's calculable that they know what they're getting and you know what you're going to enforce.
There, I figure 170 units there.
Where?
Given it's roughly 12 acres at 14 units.
It's not supposed to be fit up here, I believe, correct? You're talking about the fit up here? 170, or are you talking about conifer?
I'm talking about the Chatterwong plant. It's 12 acres, 14 units an acre.
Okay, then we're going to vote.
So essentially,
right,
it's going to be up for a vote for the board to put in a comment that would say that the board recommends that
multiple buildings,
multiple structures, as opposed to a one structure developed.
Yes,
in the mid-rise scenario.
For mid-rise,
right? For
mid-rise. Yeah, because everything else townhomes are already accounted for.
Right. Yeah, with the four units per structure. Okay. Yeah.
Anybody going to make the motion?
I'll make it.
Can you second it?
I'll second adding that, sure.
Okay. Take a vote.
Mr. Mullen?
What are we voting on?
Just this one comment.
Where have you been?
Right, you're not voting on the whole resolution.
Right, we're voting on adding the recommendation that
it's multiple buildings.
In the mid-rise scenario, there's more than one building.
Yes.
Mr. Schulner?
Yes.
Ms. Peterson?
Yes.
Mayor Nolan?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gallagher?
Yes.
Mr. Colby?
Yes.
Okay. Any other remarks?
Did the discussion on setback from the ridge end?
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to add to that.
Anybody has something to add to that?
I think the geotechnical stuff
does not
handles it.
For this language that I put in, just so it's okay, the board recommends that all mid-rise development be composed of multiple buildings versus one large structure. Essentially, it's straightforward.
Sounds right.
Okay, and I would also like to recommend that the the governing body review the statutes referred to in paragraph 8 to make sure that it is indeed their intent to do that now.
Yeah, that actually came here without it. Went back to the council. The council.
Yeah, then we resolved that.
And sent it back here.
They unanimously approved it and sent it back.
They made that determination.
Yeah. And would you want to do?
Well, if they made the determination, I recommend they take it back out.
That's up to the board. Do you want to put that recommendation in?
I don't know if I can get a second for that.
I don't think so.
I'm not going
to
second.
Give it a shot. See, if it doesn't fly, then we're on to the next comment. Anybody second that? Okay, next. Mr. Gallagher's comment.
I know you can.
Wanted to put something in there. Again, recommends taking out the statutory relocation issue.
Does anybody feel the need to establish a height versus just a story for the building?
No.
A maximum height versus number of stories?
I don't know.
I think the story is good. We agreed on that at two boards.
Anyone else? No.
No. Anybody?
Next. Anything else?
Anybody have anything else they want to stick in or take out of it?
What do you think? Given those comments, make a motion to send it back to the council.
Okay.
Put those references in
the motion.
Got a motion. Anybody second it?
I'll second it.
By Mr. Colby. Mr. Mullen, this is for sending back to the governing body.
I don't know whether this is for the support of it, so I'm going to say no.
Is this for the overall resolution?
Yes, this is on the resolution.
Okay. The whole resolution, okay.
So I'm not going to vote for it because I don't think that the bid rise in any effect is consistent with the master plan or appropriate development.
Mr. Schulman?
Yes.
Ms. Peterson?
Yes.
Mayor Nolan?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gallagher?
No.
Mr. Colby?
Yes.
About two? Harris?
Yes.
Okay. What's next here?
This one is 12-10. Let me see. Okay. And the planning board at the last meeting had a series of comments, and I'll just see if I go through these. There was nothing on page one. On page two, up at the top, there was under prohibited uses, taxi and livery services were listed as a prohibited use. And the board, let me just read your comments. Board recommends taxi liveries companies be permitted as conditional uses with appropriate standards be applied, companies be applied to said uses by the borough planner. What basically came down to in terms of conditional uses, it seemed to me that really the only concern was that they weren't on Bay Avenue. So what I did, I took it out as prohibited use, but I made it a permitted principal use under the next section four, but saying taxi, livery, bus companies except on parcels with frontage on Bay Avenue. So it's conditional in that sense. So it'd be allowed, but. That was that change to address the board's comment. The next one is going back up, going section three on page two. There was discussion of the use of the word shall versus may, and I mentioned this at the council meeting. The planning board wanted to use the word may instead of shall. Now, I did not change that because, in my opinion, that it should stay shall, because what you're doing there, the sentence reads that the bulk requirements, what you're doing in this instance is you're applying the standards of the MXD zone, the mixed use development zone, into other zones, the R1.03.
I'm sorry, Marty, you're in section 3?
Yeah, section 3, yeah. Yeah, if you look in the last, see, you're under that paragraph D, there's a use of the word shall,
right?
The last two sentences, last two full lines. And what the intent of that section is doing is allowing within the R1.03 and in the WC zone, it's allowing the mixed-use MXD standards uses in those two zones. That's what's allowing. So what I was trying to do in using the word shall is that if you're going to do that and use that, you must use MXD standards. If you make it May is optional, and that was my intent. And that's I'll defer to Jack's opinion in terms of the use of shall and May. But I explained to you sort of the intent that you're applying the standards. You're gonna if you want someone to be allowed to use MXD, which allows townhouses or hotel or something like that in those other zones, you have, in my opinion, you should say shall. Yes. Shall here.
The use of the word may in law is bad because it denotes discretion.
Mm-hmm. Which opens up
to
law.
Which opens you up to all kinds of criticism. If you want that criteria to be applied, then you should use the word shall.
That's my opinion. If you want to do something different.
My feeling, I think I was the one that's pushing for may. My opinion is this is an R103 district, and the requirements you can build within the R103 district regulations if you want to. And if you assemble all of those lots, you can still build within the R103.
So, oh, absolutely.
So that the MXD standards are a may, not a shall. You don't have to develop under those standards. You can develop residential development.
Oh, yeah. No one says that you have to. No one says that you have to use MXD or use it, develop property as an MXD.
Additional requirements of the mixed use development MXD district shall be utilized for any development.
This whole paragraph is under D is additional permitted uses in the R1.03 zone district and in a specific area. So it's an optional use. MXD uses are optional. They're
so that's
in addition to.
That's what my point is. May is an optional.
My point is if you're going to use MXD in the R.01, you have to use the MXD requirements. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you're going to. If you're going to use MXD, then you have to apply the same standards as you would as if you're in MXD. You can still develop through an R.103 or WC. These are additional permitted. So these are optional uses. And if you go down that path, then you have to use these rules. Is maybe a better way of saying it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, that Jack. To me, it seemed to me that it took away some of the ability of an R103 developer. That if you got a piece of land there or several pieces of land there, he couldn't build under those standards.
Yeah, that was not my intent. I think you're looking at it
and
just
while,
within
and
that
while
context.
Jack is looking at that. I get a little concerned that what this paragraph does is make the 2 acre requirement makes utilization of those block of buildings that are on Locust Street only available for development to the adjacent property owner because he has the 2 acre minimum already, so that any lots that he picks up he can add to his thing. No one else can come in and assemble those things and have another MXD development. It seems to me that it may be construed as being something that is favorable to the landowner that is adjacent to these properties. Do you see that? Or?
Well, I'm not really sure if I understand that, but I mean, the intent was to let the MXD zone expand
that area,
expand,
right.
and if you can develop according to the WC or the residential zone, but you don't have to, or if you wanted to expand and use MXD, you could.
But only one person can do that.
I don't know because
there's no 2 acres of land that anybody else can assemble to do another MXD development. It basically is saying that Mr. Bowerman can expand his development onto those properties because he already has the land available to him to do this.
I have a question about the marina. And historically, in town, you had a riparian branch. It was put into the square footage lot. In other words, nothing we're going to face you on the other side. There's an open recreational use in that. But decisions that came down, the zoning officer, the zoning officer saying, no, that isn't that. I just think the ordinance should address whether they want to allow that or not, whether you want to credit partially or all for that underground, because you do have a tax map that says you have this land. And basically, in the past, we always included the riparian grant in the lot coverage.
Not riparian, never.
Riparians
are leases.
No, there's riparians and there's leases. A lease does not have a specific tax bill. A riparian in the state of New Jersey has a tax bill and a dimension. Or a lease is just, Mr. Serpico?
No? I'm trying to understand his clause. Go ahead. I wasn't listening to you at all. I'm trying to get through with Peter.
All right, let's
go back to your point. Let's. Right.
Marty, I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, okay.
I think, first of all, the fifth line down, starting with R-1.03 at the end, after the word neighborhood, it shouldn't be a period, it should be a comma. There's no new sentence. Is that correct? I'm just trying to read this. The way I'm reading this, if you meet the minimum tract area,